Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and we are doing a lot of trade talk this week. This Sunday's podcast revolves around the 22 and 19 Detroit Pistons who have been in the trade rumor mill all week. Ben, Jamie, and I talk about our preferred trades, the quote-unquote resurgence of Avery Bradley, and we give you that promised update on Anthony Tolliver. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, like, and leave comments. Please leave comments on Detroit Bad Boys. It's the best way for us to build the podcast according to what the fans want. In order to do that, though, you have to follow DetroitBadBoys.com, which, of course, is the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. I am joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. Ben, how are you?
Hey, doing pretty good. Since the Pistons stunk, I think I'll go ahead and go with a Go Blue this week.
Come on.
All my Sparty fans.
Just twist the knife, why don't you?
That's the end of the podcast. We'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, you guys didn't even see that coming because I didn't mention it in pregame. So
I had a feeling someone was going to mention it.
So we had some technical issues before the start of the podcast, and so I couldn't hear Ben, and Ben couldn't hear me. And so now I'm thinking we should go back to that arrangement if we flagrantly attack the Spartans like this all podcast.
Not a bad idea.
I live like 5 minutes from campus, and I didn't even watch the game because I figured it would be a disaster for Michigan. But stopped by a fast food place afterwards, and there were some pissed Spartans fans. So That was rewarding in and of itself.
I'm glad one of the three of us were happy this week. That's the silver lining.
That third voice you hear is Jamie Delaney's. Jamie, what's up?
What up? Happy to be back on. It's been a minute, a couple months. So I wish we were talking about the Pistons under better circumstances. But you know, injuries, man, injuries will get you.
Well, okay, so they're not doing too bad. They're 22 and 19. They're 7th in the East. They are 18th in offensive rating. I remember when they had a top 10 offense in like November. That was really nice. But for now, they're top 10 in defense. But they have a league average net rating. Their net rating is 0.1. So they are 0.1 better on offense than they are on D. They went 1-2 this week, though. They lost to New Orleans. That was a really rough loss. They handed Brooklyn a fairly decisive victory. And then, of course, last night they blew the game in Chicago multiple ways. But the story for this week, for me at least, was two big things. The Pistons have a defensive rating of 133.9 in the first quarters of the last five games. For those of you who don't really use defensive rating, 100 is about league average. And so the Pistons are 33 points below that. That's pretty bad. If you've watched the first quarters of the New Orleans game or the Chicago game, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Stan in the post game has used the phrase defensive disposition so often in the last 2 weeks. It's become like a running gag between the beat guys. You can see them like joking about it on Twitter during the first quarter of the Chicago game. That was almost as fun as watching Lauri Markkanen just splash three after three in Tobias Harris's face. But yeah, Stan has a definite point. Too often they're giving up 30 points in a quarter and trying to fight back from there when offense is not this team's strength. It's defense. And they have an inability to stop guys in the first quarter, and they have an inability to get their own buckets in the fourth. They blew the New Orleans game late with a series of bungled possessions. The final play was supposed to be to Tobias Harris, and then New Orleans blew the play up, and Avery Bradley shot an awful corner three to end the game.
Well, it's pretty easy to blow a play up when you got Ish Smith inbounding the ball, who shoots less than 30% from three when you need a three. So anyway, I won't.
No. I mean, yeah, they and that's on the coaching. the inability to kind of run a sideline out of bounds set is on the coaching. The Chicago ending, that's not, well, I guess you could have called timeout with after the steal, but after the way the New Orleans game ended, I was pretty happy that they just like let him go. But that's not the result you want. Obviously, Reggie Bullock missing the layup. It looked like he was fouled.
Clearly,
but it could have gone either way.
Clearly was fouled. But I'm not mad that they didn't call it, if that makes sense. Because
it's really hard to decide a game like that.
Exactly. Like you're hard pressed to find any officiating crew that is going to call that foul in that situation to end the game. While it definitely was a foul, you can't like rely on getting that call when you know it's the final possession of the game.
Yeah, I can't get the post game because League Pass cuts off immediately after the game ends. But apparently, Grant Long in the post game was calling for Reggie to alley-oop it to Tobias. Like, I don't know if that would have worked either, but like that would have been a better play than what we had.
I know I did see on Twitter that Bullock talked about it in the locker room after, I think it was with James Edwards, that to the angle at which Tobias was kind of running behind him and the way Dunn was playing him, it would have been a pretty tough like drop off pass to make. So he felt like to go for the layup was the better option. And then he kind of went in on being fouled and the refs and whatnot. But I kind of see his point in rewatching the possession. Like it was kind of a tough angle. Tobias was like right there in the middle, kind of crowding him a bit. So it's a 50-50 kind of decision.
Yeah, Dunn was trailing just a little bit.
Yeah.
And so Dunn didn't really catch up until Reggie really started to gather. So I see where he's coming from. I think the only thing Reggie could have done if he was going to make a successful pass would have been to pass almost immediately upon receiving the ball. Yeah. And that would have had its own risks because Dunn, like I said, was just like a half step behind Reggie until Reggie started to gather.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. The bang bang pass, I think that would have worked. So I guess the question from me to you guys, and we'll start with Ben, which one of these issues, the inability to stop anybody in the first quarter and the inability to score in the fourth, do you think is more pressing? Which one should the Pistons focus on going forward?
Well, so the inability to stop people in the first is a concern, and it's like the stat that you pointed out in terms of like almost 134 points per 100 possessions, which is what defensive rating, and like that's disastrous. But it's bigger than that to me because they've struggled all season in terms of getting down early and needing to make sort of semi-spectacular comebacks. And, you know, in the beginning of the season when they were really hot, one of the things I kept saying was, they're going to have to stop doing this because they're just not as good offensively as they started the season, right? I mean, everybody was making shots. Reggie looked great. And they made all of these comebacks. At one point, I think they led the league in double-digit comebacks, right? That's just not how you want to play basketball. So they obviously have to address this. But they're also not going to stay at 134 points defensive rating for the rest of the season. I mean, that's, I think, probably a little bit of an aberration. Oh, there's Baby Gulker agreeing nice. With me. But to me, I would like to see them figure out the scoring in the fourth. And I think scoring as a whole this week was rough. I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but Avery Bradley led the teams in shot attempts by quite a margin in all three of these games. And even though he shot the ball better than he's been shooting, I just don't think that's a recipe for success. And I think to my eye anyway, Avery really tried to take over in the fourth quarter and that kind of backfired, I think, especially in the New Orleans game. So to me, that's an easier fix than the defense because the defense has been a problem all season. And ultimately, it's got to be, sorry, Baby Gulker again. It's got to be Tobias's team in the fourth, in my opinion, when Reggie is out and he's going to be out for a while yet. And Avery Bradley just doesn't have any business carrying the team's offense in the fourth quarter. So if I'm Stan Van Gundy and those are the two things I'm looking at fourth quarter scoring and I'm figuring out how to make Tobias the man in the fourth quarter.
And to your point, Ben, like the struggling to defend in the first quarter being a problem all season, it was a problem last season too. I feel like this has been something we've kind of talked about for a couple of years now with this Pistons team. So I don't know how you fix that. To me, it's Stan keeps saying it's a rotations thing and getting the right set of guys out there. But I agree with what you said. You got to focus on the fourth quarter scoring. That's the easier thing to fix. And I think you'll see more immediate dividends if you fix that first.
Well, I remember the first Philadelphia game where they were playing really far off of Ben Simmons, the home mm-hmm. game. And Stan admitted after the game that, like, yeah, we messed up the defensive game plan, and like that's why Simmons was able to get rolling early. I wonder how much of that has to do with some of the first quarter troubles. Just because you see the team kind of locked down in the second half after Stan gets a view of like what the team is actually trying to accomplish, but the game plan in the first quarter and in the first half of what he envisioned might happen is maybe not happening.
But don't we employ the most in league NBA scouts out of any front mm-hmm. office in the league?
But that was like that's like pro scouting though. That's like
no, I know, but like shouldn't that for. Right? But shouldn't that scouting like data still help our coaching staff in building their defensive game plan? I guess I'm just playing devil's advocate of like I hope that that's not the reason, because it seems like we've, at least from a PR perspective, put out there that we have all this data and like scouts out there looking at every individual player in the league. And if that's not helping our defensive game plan game to game, that's a problem.
No, yeah.
That's all.
I'd like to know what that data is though. Like, I really, obviously we'll never know. It's all going to be proprietary and we might know in 20 years, you know, but I'm not sure it's the right data. And the other thing is, I've said this before, so I won't beat a dead horse, but Van Gundy has got to be one of the least flexible coaches in the NBA. It's like he gets his game plan, however he's getting it. If it's all the big data or whatever, he gets his game plan and he just doesn't waver. Like it's like, it literally looks to me like he's got that big long sheet of paper, right, that he stuffs in his jacket pocket and that's got his rotations and it's got his plays and that's what he's going to do, no matter what happens over the course of the game. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Or if they do change, it takes them a half. They need to go in and discuss what they're going to change at halftime and then follow that rigidly, as opposed to just like going possession by possession or going quarter by quarter or even, you know, sub by sub, 6 minute break by 6 minute break. So I guess next up is we promised you guys last week that we talked some Anthony Tolliver, because Anthony Tolliver doesn't get enough love on this pod. No, but
really,
the reason we were going to talk about him was because he had two really bad weeks, right? He was struggling a lot, especially from three, but he's kind of brought himself back out of it. He's 2 of 3 from three against Brooklyn and 3 of 4 from three against Chicago. He had a 99 defensive rating for the week. So he's,
Ben, how much do you love that efficiency? That is so efficient right there. I'm loving it.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah. As long as Tolliver is like making shots, like he's fine in the rotation. Like maybe you shouldn't rely on him to play 25 minutes a night. Maybe you should rely on him to play like 18 to 20 minutes a night. But as long as he's making threes, he's fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, especially right now with guys kind of like dinged up and putting our rotation out of whack, like, we're going to have to lean on Tolliver a little bit more than maybe Stan is comfortable with. But as long as he can like stay efficient with his offense, hey, that's all we need.
I got to say though, I didn't love 26 minutes against against New Orleans. I thought that was a bit much. I mean, I know there was a reason for it, but it was quite clearly his worst game of the week.
Yeah.
And I think 26 minutes is just too much for him.
I'm trying to remember who he was matched up against. It had to be like a size thing.
Well, usually, they put him out there on Anthony Davis, but he didn't start the game. But he was
playing
a lot in the third quarter before Davis went out. So that was part of it.
But yeah, no, I think he had a better week. I think the Pistons are better with him, especially with no Lure all season. There's no question they're better with him when he's playing well. I really hope his three-point shot rebounds, because his defense is a constant. His energy is a constant. I think his positivity is a constant, and I think that could be a good thing, because I think the team's going to continue to have its struggles without Reggie. So if that shot's falling, that's just a huge help.
Yeah. I think the thing to do is kind of, even when he wasn't playing well, was to let him ride it out, right? And the shot would eventually return. And like Ben said, the energy and the defense are fairly constant. Even if they're not superlative, they're fairly constant. And so I'm pleased his shot seems to be back. But I'm hoping that after they play this pretty home-centric schedule coming up, and we'll get to that, that it'll stay that way. He'll stay, his body will stay in order. Because behind him right now would be Henry Ellenson, who I don't think is ready right now.
Or going to be a Piston for much longer.
Well
possibly. We don't know. We'll get to that later.
We got trade talk in all caps. Like we're going to get there. But next up, we're going to talk about Avery Bradley. We criticized Avery Bradley fairly heavily on this podcast last week. I'm happy to say that his play has rebounded, so we don't have to do that again. He slashed 45, 43, 50. He was 1-2 from the free throw line for the week. You could really see him, especially in the New Orleans game in the third quarter, decide to attack the rim instead of shooting and settling for those 18 footers that we hate so much. And I think that was a big part of what keyed his mental turnaround. Even if he doesn't make all those shots in the paint, and he won't, that does things like open up the glass for Andre's offensive rebounding, and it gets other guys in a rhythm, and it breaks down the defense in a way that the team really needs without Reggie Jackson. You know, he still turned the ball over a bit too much. His handle is still really weak. He turned the ball over, I think, twice in the first quarter in the Chicago game, where he just like dribbled it off Chris Dunn's foot. And it's like, oh, okay, well, nothing you can do about that. Shout out to Mochi. And defensive communication, where like he's too hyper focused in on his matchup, that remains an issue. You can, if you want to see some clips of that, you can check out Michael Snyder's The Closeout on Detroit Bad Boys. That's one of the best things we run weekly. And last week he ran a fairly damning examination of Avery Bradley's off ball defense that I would highly check. I encourage everybody to check out. But yeah, I'm glad that Avery Bradley is playing better, but I'm still like fine. I'm still fine trading him. Do you guys think has his recent improvement in play led you guys to believe that you'd want to hang on to him instead of trading him at the deadline?
I want to hear Jamie's thoughts on this. I have my own, but I want to hear Jamie, what Jamie has to say.
I was really hoping you would go first. I'm really torn on this, because when we started the season, I was pretty convinced that this would be like the year of let's try and convince Avery Bradley to stick around and do whatever we need to do to resign him. And now lately, after that kind of tough stretch and then him picking it back up this week, I don't know. I think from a front office perspective, I would deal him. I think you're going to get the best value for him. Contenders will want a guy like him in their rotation as they go deep in the playoffs. So I think he'll get the most bang for his buck, so to speak. And yeah, I don't know. I don't see a long-term future for him as a Piston.
I'm very surprised to hear you say that, Jamie.
I am too. That's really interesting.
So first off, I just think he's like, he hasn't been everything as advertised, between the turnovers, between his off-ball defense, and the slumps he goes through offensively. I love his disposition as a player. He's a treat to watch in terms of just being a basketball fan. But with all that going on, Kennard's also kind of shown like he's got a pretty bright future in the league. And he's making some noise sooner than I think any of us expected. So while we were kind of like terrified at the prospect of losing Bradley at the start of the season, now seeing Kennard, and you know, if we hold on to our first round pick, I'm not too worried about Bradley leaving. And if we can get another young wing guy, or maybe dare I say, a stretch four to help us out, I'm all for it. So that's kind of where I land.
Yeah. So I would, Laz, I want to think, this is like not me trying to be like playing semantic games, but did Avery Bradley play better this week, or did his shots go in the basket?
Well, I think it's a little of both, right? Because you saw him attack more often instead of settling. And so even if the shots don't go in, you'd rather have him attack than settle. But yeah, the shots going in fairly important when evaluating, I think.
Doesn't that in turn make you play better? Or now
yeah, I mean,
like a philosophical discussion.
Yeah, it's fair. All of those things are fair. And I'm sort of being a dork by even putting it that way. But like, to me, you know, one of the things that strikes me when I look at just looking at Avery's stats, forgetting about the eyeball test for just a second, 2 free throw attempts this week. 2 free throw attempts for the week, right? So what does that tell you? Yes, he did attack more, but like, to me, that's still a glaring issue in his game. Like, he took a lot of shots and a lot of them went in, which I will take. Absolutely 100% will take. I will take this week's Avery Bradley over what we have been seeing from Avery Bradley without hesitation. But he's still such a jump shooter that is going to run hot and cold. And I don't think he's at the point in his career where we're going to see a significant change in that respect. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's yeah, really a jump shooter. And when he makes shots, that's really good because his on the ball defense at least is good. And shout out to Michael Center, because that wasn't a fantastic piece. But when his shots don't go in, like, it hurts the offense, especially when he leads the team in shot attempts like he did this week. I mean, looking back at the New Orleans game, right? 23 shots, Tobias with 18. Looking at the Brooklyn game, which is such a blowout, it's hard to take too much from it. But still, 16 shot attempts for Bradley, 14 for Tobias. I don't love that. And then against the Bulls, 19 field goal attempts for Bradley and 14 for Tobias. And admittedly, Tobias struggled mightily against the Bulls. But taking a lot of jump shots and not getting to the line, I just don't think that's going to be a winning recipe for the offense as a whole, regardless of whether or not, you know, Avery's individual stats are better as a result. So that would be my critical analysis of Avery, in spite of the fact that he was admittedly better this week than he's been.
That's fair. So Ben, I'm going to devil's advocate your devil's advocate.
What?
How many free throws did Luke Kennard shoot this week?
Oh, I didn't even look. Probably yeah. Zero.
I think
probably
he had like zero. A technical in the Brooklyn game. But my point is, that is to say that, like,
did you really?
Yeah, you're right. 1 for 1.
Shout out to that.
Oh, he took two against the Pelicans.
So he shot.
But your point still stands.
Luke Kennard attacks, you know, less than Avery Bradley did this week, and is pretty much a jump shooter. But he's a more, I think, his shot profile is a little bit better than Avery's. He shoots more threes, and he makes them more often. But other than that, like, that's a lot of the same. So.
Yeah. His range is a little bit deeper and more flexible than Bradley's, yeah. I'd say, too.
Well, and the thing that I was thinking about when we were playing the Bulls was, like, every time Avery shot an open three that was the result of the natural flow of the offense, like, it wasn't him pulling up or taking it off the dribble or whatever, like, I felt so good about those shots. It's the shots he take when it's, like, you know, the 17-footer off the dribble with 10 seconds on the shot clock. It's those shots that are like, oh, if he just didn't take that shot ever, I think he would be such a better team player. That's just my read.
That's fair. That's fair. But your point about him taking over in the fourth quarter over Tobias in the Chicago game, I think, is well-founded. Tobias, he had a pretty good week this week, but he really struggled in the Chicago game. And it's really hard for the Pistons to win when Tobias doesn't play when he doesn't play that well. The things that you can be encouraged about this week are that he's definitely, as he's gotten the ball more, he's definitely looking to make passes in the flow of the offense. He's averaging 2.5 assists over his last 5 games versus 1.9 for the season. Like, that doesn't sound like a lot, but you can definitely see that he's trying to make the reads that he not necessarily wasn't before. One thing that we lauded him for last week that didn't really happen this week was that he didn't get to the line as much. He only shot one free throw against Brooklyn and two free throws against Chicago. But you could see the refereeing in the Chicago game was really frustrating him. He felt like he was creating contact and not getting rewarded for it. And, you know, maybe you can attribute that to part of his offensive struggles. But for my money, I think I'd rather see him continue to both of those things are good, but I think I'd rather see him create more contact and get more, continue to get the free throw attempts he was getting earlier in the month, rather than make the reads he's been making, just because when he's making those reads, it's usually to Andre or to Avery. And so like Andre, those are easy shots, but like Avery, you never quite know exactly what you're going to get when you pass him the ball in the corner. And so I'd rather have him focus on the offense that he can provide, because I think that's that ties back to the first thing we talked about. That'll lead to more consistent fourth quarter offense. You know, you look at guys like James Harden, who's not playing right now, or like a Giannis, and, you know, they create a lot of offense for themselves in the fourth quarter, but a ton of that comes from the free throw line. And those are basically free points. Tobias is a really good free throw shooter. And so, Jamie, I know what I'd rather have him focus on. Jamie, what would you rather have him focus on?
Yeah, who, Tobias? I agree with you. I'd rather him kind of focus on executing the offense, and keeping the ball moving. The stat you pointed out about his assist kind of going up, I think is excellent. We need more of that. I think oftentimes he, like, the play will break down and he feels like he's got to make something out of nothing. And that's when he goes looking for contact. And, you know, I think we've talked about this before on the pod. He's just never been one to get those kind of whistles, for whatever reason. So I think he's to focus on that would just be kind of a loss. I think he's just got to focus on keeping the ball moving, keeping guys running around and keeping the offense flowing.
Ben, what do you think? Ben?
Ben's consulting. Sorry. With the baby.
The baby, I had the mic muted. So short term, I 100% agree. I don't think he should be tinkering too much with that part of his game in the middle of the season. But I think long term, this is a roster concern, and it's something individually Tobias can focus on. Tobias is a guy who, when you look at just his straight shooting percentages, you would think some of the all-in-one metrics that really focus on efficiency would like him a lot more than they do. And the reason they don't is because he doesn't get to the line. So I think if there's a next step to be taken for Tobias, and I think he's young enough where this is still a possibility, it has to be learning how to get contact when he gets to the basket. To me, I don't think this is something he's consciously doing, but to me, it looks like he's trying to avoid contact and avoid getting his shot blocked long-term over the course of the next offseason. You know,
like the CJ McCollum effect?
Sure. Yeah. Like,
no, CJ literally has the same problem. Like, he doesn't get to the line either.
I think I'll say it more briefly. If there's a next step for Tobias, it's going to have to come from him getting to the free throw line. Full stop.
I agree.
It's just not the time. Like, the middle of the season is the time to try to add that to your game.
I mean, if you would have asked me this last season, I would have said the 3-point shot is the next step for him. And he's added that this offseason. And so, you know, maybe with another offseason to focus on creating contact, drawing fouls, we could see another, you know, step up from Tobias. And that would be.
Well, and when you look at like the elite offenses and the elite of individual scorers, not just right now, but throughout history, the Jordans, the Birds, and currently LeBron James, the Durants, the Hardens, like, their shooting percentages aren't the things that make them so ridiculously efficient. It's them being very good free throw shooters and getting to the line very often. I mean, it just makes your efficiency numbers go off the charts. And getting into the penalty early, like, when does that ever happen, right? Like, when are the Pistons ever in the penalty 8 minutes into a quarter? Like, it just doesn't happen. It only happens, you know, they get the two fouls in the last 2 minutes of a quarter. To me, that's the next step for Tobias. And I think it would help with some of the consistency that our offense seems to not have, because we're such a jump shooting oriented team. If Reggie could get to the line consistently and if Tobias could get to the line consistently, I think that would help the whole offense output quite a bit.
I like how you talked about great guards in history and efficiency and purposely left Kobe's name off the list. That was much appreciated.
It wasn't even conscious. It was just...
Your subconscious is just that evolved that you knew, I shouldn't say this guy's name.
One guy that has, you know, created a lot of contact and shot some of those free throws for the Pistons is Dwight Bikes, who he got... I initially wrote down graduated, but that's like not right at all. But he signed a standard NBA contract. He's gonna be on the Pistons roster full time.
Guy's balled out.
Yeah, he really has.
He's balled out. I didn't even know. I won't even lie. I didn't even know how to pronounce his last name when he joined the roster. But he's just been such a great surprise the past couple weeks. Really just picking up and filling in for that that second unit point guard spot.
Yeah, I mean, I expect his 3-point shooting to go down probably pretty soon. But other than that, as the 2.5 point guard, sometimes he's the backup, sometimes he's the third guard. Like, I'm totally fine with him moving forward. I don't see a reason that we need to spend any trade assets or free agency money to pick up kind of another backup guard. Do you guys?
Well, we got Kay Felder now, so no need.
I'm not a huge Kay Felder guy.
What? OU Grizzlies?
Tall point guards.
Local guy? Everyone loves tall point guards.
Kay Felder is not tall.
No, I'm not tall at all. No, I'm with you. I'm so-so on the Felder thing. I don't think we need to spend the assets to go out and get another point guard. Unless it's a name we will discuss later.
Let's discuss that name right now. It's trade talk.
Oh, all right. The only point guard I would be comfortable, and I'm even hesitant to say comfortable, but the only point guard I think you would want to get is Tyreek Evans right now, if I'm the Pistons. That's the only guy that I think would make sense and actually have a positive impact on the team. And might be the most obtainable.
Is Tyreek a point guard?
I mean, he's playing point guard for Memphis. He's a tall ass point guard.
He's playing like two guard, right? Like Dylan Brooks and they got like Mario Chalmers and everybody. Like those guys are their like nominal point guards, but like he's handling the offense, but like secondary.
He's running point. Yeah. I mean, I've seen him run point though. It's in some stretches for Memphis. I think, I don't know. I would see if we were to go after him, I could see him kind of running the offense for the Pistons.
Is that your like number one guy? Is that your dream guy, Jamie?
No. That's not, I don't have a dream guy. I have a trade that I think makes the most sense for both parties. And that's my most realistic scenario.
All right, let's hear it.
I think Mirotic would be the most realistic win-win trade that the Pistons could make. The Bulls have a logjam at the forward spot with Markkanen kind of balling out. Stanley Johnson is, you know, still very young, still super athletic. I think the Bulls could use some depth on the wing, especially in terms of athleticism. So I think if we can get away with a Stanley Johnson and maybe a second rounder, I'd even be comfortable with our first rounder as it was rumored on Twitter for Mirotic. That I think is a win-win trade for both of us. I think Mirotic brings basically the promise of what we all thought Lure would do in terms of a stretch four playing alongside Drummond. I think Mirotic is kind of a closer realization of that. He's a proven shooter. He's going to go through dry spells. But, I mean, outside of last year, I think his three-point percentage was like 34%. Before that, it was like damn near 40. In his rookie year, it was like 38, something like that. So he's a proven shooter, and I think you get him in SVG's system, he'll fit in nicely.
Ben, what do you think of Mirotić?
It depends on what we're trading for him. I mean, I would absolutely trade a first-round draft pick to get him because –
Really?
Oh, absolutely. No, I wouldn't even hesitate because look at what Van Bauer has done in terms of first round draft picks. I mean, outside of Kennard, right? Ellinson is buried on the bench, may or may not ever be an NBA player. Stanley Johnson is clearly in the doghouse, clearly is in his own head, and may never amount to anything as long as SVG is coaching him, right? Like that, it may just not be the right fit, right? It might just be that SVG and Stanley Johnson don't work together. So why would we do this again? I mean, if you can get a guy like Mirotić, who is just hitting his prime, clearly has flaws in his game, right? Like there are clear weaknesses to his game. But he would be better than any first-round pick the Pistons have had over the Sven Bauer tenure. Kennard maybe could become better, but it's too soon to say. So I'd absolutely do it. And I would even absolutely trade Stanley Johnson in a first for Mirotić, because if the Pistons are going to make the playoffs, I still don't think they have to do something. Like, it's possible that they could make the playoffs without doing something. But adding Mirotić, I think, would help with their offense. The other thing I like is there's the potential to slide Tobias to the three with a guy like Mirotić, because Mirotić still gives you some space. I think that duo, that 3-4 duo, would be really tough for defenses to deal with and would add a whole lot of versatility. So I would absolutely do that trade without hesitating for a second.
So I texted my Bulls friend, shout out at @T_Naz on Twitter. T Naz, he's like the mayor of Loyola Chicago basketball Twitter, about the trade. He's a huge Bulls fan, and this, I'm just going to read some highlights he sent me. You guys are in win now mode, so you don't have patience for Stanley. Mirotić is proven. he still doesn't want to be here. With Markkanen balling out, we have a front court logjam, and our wings are awful, and they're all small. Dunn, Levine, Stanley, Laurie, and Lopez is a super fun lineup, and I'd maybe even put Portis at the five to make it super athletic. So I think from the Bulls side of things, it makes a ton of sense. Mirotić doesn't want to be there. We need that stretch four. I think it's the deal that makes the most sense right now. So
there's a couple things. I'm not a huge Mirotić person. He's really hot this year, but I think he needs to be a huge part of your offense. He needs to really feel involved in your offense in order to be the shooter that I think he is. When you saw when he was playing with like Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler as like a standstill spot up guy, like that's when he was at his most ineffective. But when he has the ball in his hands, the ball is like whipping around, he gets to post guys up, his shot goes in. And so I think having another guy who needs the ball in his hands but can't necessarily create his own shot is not necessarily the best fit for the Pistons. The second thing is that Mirotić makes $12.5 million this year. He's got a team option for $12.5 million next year. If the Bulls exercise that team option before he's traded, he no longer has like his no trade veto clause that he has in his contract currently because of his bird's rights. But all that is to say, like, you can't just trade Stanley Johnson in the first round pick for him, because Stanley doesn't make enough money. You gotta attach some more money. So that's you gotta send out Boban, or that's you gotta send out Galloway, or that's you gotta if you send Lure and the first round pick as like an apology for John Lure, then like that works. But like, you can't just trade Stanley Johnson for Mirotić straight up. I hear you guys, but like, I really don't feel like I would enjoy cheering for Mirotić, and like that sounds so subjective.
No, I totally agree. And when I was like looking at like kind of our rundown of like the trade ideas in the Pistons subreddit, I really didn't want to like this trade. And then when I looked at the numbers and looked at some of the film on Mirotić, I was like, damn it, I can't fight this. I do worry about him coming in, if he were to come in, like what that does to the locker room. This feels like an already pretty fragile situation. And all the reports that came out around the whole like punch scenario, it just sounds like Mirotić has this like sense of entitlement. He wasn't spending much time in the off season with the team. Which he had his reasons for being a restricted free agent and kind of holding out a little bit. But having said that, I worry about how he would fit in and what he would do to this already kind of delicate situation from a chemistry standpoint.
Yeah. To me, it was really telling when like he got his face broken and like no one in the locker room was like really defending him. Like, that's not a great sign, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, completely agree. Completely. My my defense of this trade, or my, I guess, support or endorsement of this trade is purely from a basketball numbers standpoint, oddly enough, which is so not my role. From the other side of things, this trade would make me super, super nervous. So that's, I'll just leave that out there.
Yeah, it all depends on what the price is. Like, there's a lot of trades for Mirotić I absolutely would not do, because I'm not, seriously, I'm not his biggest fan. But I think if it's a first round pick and a part that's underachieving or isn't being used, like, why not, I guess.
Yeah, I see your point. So the Pistons were also rumored to have interest in Evan Fournier. Does that name, like, set off any alarms or do anything for you, Ben?
It doesn't. I'm not huge. I mean, I'm just not a huge fan of his. I think
just don't Google his name.
Yeah, don't Google his last name.
Oh, no. Okay. I won't.
Seriously, I won't do that.
I don't know. He scores. I mean, he scores a bunch of points on a bad team by taking a bunch of shots. Meh. I don't feel crazy about him.
I feel like when I went and watched some of his film today, I just don't. Would we, is the potential that we would be trading Bradley for him? Because to me, looking at his game, it looks a lot like what Bradley's been doing this year. A lot of shot, like jump shots. He does get to the rim quite a bit, which I did like to see. But I can't see us getting Fournier and Bradley in the same backcourt. That just seems like it doesn't make sense in my head.
Well, and he makes $17 million a year. Like, he's not cheap. So you have to send out quite a bit to get him. I'm not sure how long his contract is, but the Pistons have kind of a scary salary profile. It is as it is, and I'm not sure, like, $17 million for Evan Fournier is what you want to add to that salary profile. Like, does he move the needle enough at $17 million? For me, that's a no.
Yeah, I think part of that, so that came out in the Woj report, and I think part of that was, like, the Pistons are still evaluating all their options with regards to Reggie Jackson. And so a Jackson for Fournier swap straight up would work financially. And that's one of the few pieces the Pistons could trade just like straight up for Fournier and have it work financially. And so I think that was a little bit of it. And there's always been, Stan's always been a willing trade partner with his former team, the Orlando Magic. And the Orlando Magic as... Well, I guess the former organization, the organization before John Hammond, had always kind of had like a tertiary interest in Reggie Jackson, the point guard, back from his OKC days. But so there's always been like Reggie to Orlando rumors. But yeah, I don't know if I would do that either. I'm with Jamie. Evan Fournier doesn't really do much, especially not at $17 million.
Yeah, well, look, I'm not the biggest Reggie Jackson fan, right? Like, but I wouldn't do that trade either. Like, I wouldn't, I don't think I'd even consider it.
So
hard pass.
So the trade assets the Pistons do have is what their first round pick this year, Langston Galloway, who is signed at a somewhat reasonable contract for a backup two guard for two more years after this one. They've got Luke Kennard, who teams have expressed interest in, but have been roundly rebuffed. Thank you, Stan.
Not
interested in trading Luke. God. He's way too good, way too quickly. Yep. So teams are still interested in Stanley Johnson, but for me,
I feel like it's Stanley and Bradley. Those are your two best trade chips. Yeah. Bradley's expiring. Proven, like, has the experience in the postseason. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, someone who, like, has a shot to make noise in the postseason comes calling for him.
The thing that's tough about that, and I totally agree with you, he'd be a fantastic addition to a lot of people's benches at like 24 minutes a night, right? The challenge is that those teams might be willing to give you like a first 2 years down the road and then two contracts that are just contracts, right? Like, they're not necessarily guys that are going to help the Pistons make a push for the playoffs. So, I mean, I agree. That's like a logical guy that the Pistons would want to move, but I just have a hard time figuring out like what's a realistic trade partner for him. And maybe you guys have dug into that more than I have, but I kind of struggle to figure that one
out. So the one that like keeps bouncing around the DBB boards is Avery Bradley for Jordan Clarkson. The Lakers are looking to get cap space. And Clarkson is, he makes like, I think 11 mil for the next 3 years. He's a pretty good backup shooting guard, but like, that's what he is. I don't really think of him as a defender, but like, I don't hate that trade, but I don't love it either. And that would help out the Lakers because they're looking to clear out room to sign LeBron and Paul George, because that's obviously what's going to happen.
I wouldn't be mad at Clarkson. I mean, I don't think he would love coming to Detroit. Seems like he's pretty into the LA scene, so to speak. But I think his game would fit nicely here. I wouldn't be mad at that at all. I did have that crazy three-way trade with LA, Chicago, and the Pistons, where Reggie somehow ended up in a Lakers uniform as like a chip to kind of like entice Paul George to go there since they're best friends. But I think that there's zero chance of that happening.
That'd be pretty
funny. It would be pretty. I mean, some people on Lakers Twitter when I posted the trade were like, "What the hell is wrong with you? You're crazy. Why would we want Reggie's contract?" But then I was like, "You look at what you guys paid Mozgov and Deng. I mean, is any contract really that crazy? Come on." But I'm going back to Clarkson. I wouldn't be mad at that. I think that would be kind of a solid move.
That's fair.
Is he a starter though? Like, no. I mean, Laz, your opinion is he's not. I don't know if I have a sense of that.
No, not in this league. He's not good enough defensively. He's like a Lou Williams type, where he's way better off the bench than he is as a starter.
Poor man's Lou Williams. Not, I don't even know if I can say that. Because like Lou is just balling out right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, he's had a pretty good couple years.
Lou Williams. Sorry, Lou. That was insulting. Yes.
So, all right, Ben. Jamie's dream acquisition is Miritich. Who's
not dream. That's not your dream.
That's your dream. It's okay. You extolled his virtues quite loudly.
It's a realist dream.
All right.
It's on the vision board. It's not a dream.
It's a lucid dream.
There we go.
All right, Ben. What's your dream? Who's your dream acquisition?
As long as we get rid of Boban, like, I'm good with pretty much anything.
Wow. What?
Ben's trolling.
What?
Yeah, I'm trolling. I honestly don't have one. I think it's going to be tough, and I will say that I'm going to be pretty surprised if the Pistons make any sort of significant trade. I don't think their assets are good enough right now. It's a very different situation than it was a year ago where I liked their assets. This year, I just don't have a really good feeling. And as a result, I can't say that there's a trade that jumps out at me as a really good one.
But what if, like, I'm genuinely curious about this. Say we don't make a move. What do we do in the offseason? Doesn't that kind of put the gun to our head, so to speak? Like, I know that we're kind of in a precarious salary situation regardless, but I feel like we have to make a move to almost give ourselves a better idea of what to do this summer.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the gun kind of is already at the head, I guess is what I would say. I feel like the Pistons are kind of stuck. I wouldn't call it the mediocrity treadmill, because I think if they're healthy, they're better than mediocre, right? Like, they're a 45 win roster. I just feel like they've kind of gotten themselves into this really awkward spot by, I mean, they hardly even have the mid-level exception available to them if they're not careful, because they're going to get themselves, you know, up near the luxury tax. And so I just, I'm really nervous about the long term.
Honestly, my dream scenario, Laz, is we start heading towards Tanksville now.
No,
I'm serious. I'm serious. I would much prefer we start blowing it up sooner rather than later. Because to be frank, I'm not sure. Is anyone like really convinced that this is a team that's going to like make it to a finals in the next 3 years?
No. But you can say that of 26 other NBA teams. And so that's not a good reason. That's not a good enough reason in my mind to blow it up.
So okay. here's going to be my counter argument to you.
In my mind, that's a good enough reason.
Yeah, okay. If you're an all or nothing type of fan, like if you want championship or bust, I can deal with that. But the thing I'll say is,
I didn't even say championship. I said make it to an NBA finals.
Finals or bust. I'm cool with that.
I don't even think championships are way too premature, but even like an Eastern Conference Finals, I think they could maybe sneak one in there, barring some injuries. Like,
no, they're not good enough. They still need one more significant piece.
Yeah. And I don't know with the current contracts, like how that piece is even like, I can't even wrap my head around what that piece would be.
So I think it could be Kennard. It could be Kennard. And the reason I'll say that is because of Andre Drummond. Yeah, wow. I'll say that because of Andre Drummond. The reason I'll say that is Andre Drummond is better this year than he's ever been. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Right, like his free throws, he can stay on the floor. Defensively, he's starting to get it. If he improves a little bit more every year until he's 28, like to me, that's your window. Like that's the year you need to be aiming for. And that's still a few years away. So now, can Van Gundy wait it out that long? Does he have enough job security to get there? I don't know.
No, right? I will say no flat out.
Okay, that's cool. But to me, like if blowing it up means getting rid of Andre Drummond, then no. I would keep Tobias and I would keep Drummond, and I would be looking at that 28, 29 years old mark for both of those guys as sort of the timeline you have to build around that. And those two guys with the right pieces in Kennard, like he's already above average NBA player, I think, for above average backup shooting guard, let's say. Like, I think there's a ceiling there that's a little bit higher than we thought. So those could be three guys who maybe that's enough of a core to build around to get you to a serious contender in the East. And it's just longer term. It's still another three. That's what I would
say. I that's super fair. I can kind of get behind that.
The thing that gets me is that if your core is Tobias and Andre and Kennard and like a half decent point guard, like you're probably a good enough team to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference anyway. So like, why not? Why tear it up? I guess
it's for the draft picks,
other ways to acquire draft picks. There are other ways to acquire young guys. Like the entirety of the 2015 of the entirety of like Stanley Johnson's draft class is like up for sale basically because they're all terrible, right? Like if you want to take a chance on some young guys, like you could try those guys. There are guys like available on teams every year. And so I don't really see a reason to blow it up for draft position because you're going to be good no matter what. You're going to be, if you don't give up Andre and Tobias, you're going to be a certain level of good no matter what.
Well, and the incentive to blow it up for draft position doesn't exist in the same way anymore. But I think my thinking in blowing it up is more of like, I think we need to, and maybe it's just me, like I think this organization needs to get their head around like fixating on Drummond's window and then kind of moving on from Bradley, Reggie, even Tobias. I'm not 100% on him being part of that core you build around yet, but like I can kind of see Ben's point. I just think like them sticking with the full cast of guys they have right now, it's just not, it doesn't make sense to me. So I think you got to pick one or two guys, Kennard being one of them, and then go from there.
All right. So last question on this topic. If you're looking to the future, if you're looking, you know, 3-4 years ahead and you want to keep Andre and Tobias together, does Stanley Johnson have a place on that team?
No.
So do you trade him now or do you trade him later?
I think his value, I kind of said this in the rundown. I think his value is the highest, if not like the second rung highest it'll be right now, just because of his age and because of the like unknown potential. I just haven't seen play that would warrant a huge jump in his trade value when he is healthy. Like I don't see that coming from nowhere. I think we kind of know what kind of player he is at this point, even though he is super young and only 21. In this system with Stan, I just don't think his value is getting higher than it is right now.
That's fair.
And Laz, I don't know if this was you on Twitter or if it was you like last week on the pod, or maybe it was someone else on Twitter, but someone pointed out like when Stanley was on the exercise bike and he had like just that terrible grim look on his face.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
Like SVG's burned him, man.
That's kind of why I started thinking about that over the week, and that's why I made my comment earlier. Like, maybe this relationship has just run its course.
Have you guys ever worked at a job where you just, like, that relationship between your boss has just deteriorated to the point where there's no going back? Like, that's how I feel Stanley is right now. Like, he's working at, like, a daycare or, like, Blockbuster, and he just hates his job. And he's like, get me out of here. I don't care what it takes. Like, that's the look I see in his eyes right now.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that was me on Twitter, and that was a hilarious photo of him on the exercise bike during the New Orleans game.
And then Stan made it worse because after the game he was like, I should have played Stanley.
Yeah,
like why you put that in the media?
And then then they held him out of the Chicago game because his hip got tight again, right? Like, I don't blame Stan, but like, I totally see where you're coming from, where this relationship might have just run its course, which is unfortunate.
It is. I think, especially going back to the Cavs playoff series 2 years ago, it was like the city kind of fell in love with Stanley Johnson. We kind of were super excited about the potential, and now it's like, man, he's a shell. Like, I think he's just so angry with how his career has played out thus far in Detroit. Like, he needs that change of scenery.
I just can't see him traded to Chicago, because then he would torture us in the conference for like the next like 8 years. I don't need that. So he can't be part of the Mirotić package. But yeah, I see where you guys are coming from. So wrap up. The Pistons played 12 of their next 15 games at home. They've played a lot better at home than on the road. If there ever was like a big time to make the next push to kind of solidify their playoff position, it's definitely like right now. So tomorrow, Monday, MLK Day, they play Charlotte. They play at Toronto, which is like their second to last away game of the month. Then it's home for Washington, home for Brooklyn, home for Utah, home for OKC. That's a pretty tough slate of opponents. The Donovan Mitchell quote-unquote revenge game, you should have drafted me game, will be interesting to watch, I think. But out of those six or so games, again, that's home for Charlotte, at Toronto, home for Washington, home for Brooklyn, home for Utah, and home for OKC. Jamie, how many of those should they win?
I mean, this is a team that's better at home than they are on the road. I think they split. I think it's 3-3.
Ben?
You said looking at the next six, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I was trying to do the math in my head too. I was like, yeah. Did he say seven or seven?
I won't say they need to win four because they're not quite there yet. They're still a few games above 500, but they really need to win four. But it's going
to
be a tall order.
They need to get to the All-Star break and be 500.
Yeah, if they can, like, Toronto on the road, that's a tough one. OKC at home is a tough one. And then, like, you've got Charlotte, Brooklyn, and Utah. You got to win those three. Like, you just have to. And then Washington, I mean, without Reggie, I mean, John Wall might just have a field day, and that game could be over quickly. That's the coin flip.
Washington's going to be the tough one. We don't expect to be tough.
Yeah. But if they do, like, that's huge. But 3-3 is probably, unfortunately, what's realistic.
So I think they have this weird tendency to play really well at home against upper-tier Western Conference teams. So I think that OKC game is looking at me like, hey, that's a game that they could steal.
And that's a back-to-back, isn't it?
Is it? Ooh, I don't know.
No, it's not.
For Oklahoma, you mean?
No, they play at Cleveland and Cleveland in a back-to-back, like right after that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
That's hell. That's two losses.
Why do we? That's like 2 years in a row we've done that, where we've done the like location, like basically the Dan Gilbert series. Like, why do we? I don't understand the scheduling behind that.
Yeah, maybe Dan Gilbert's got way more pull than we thought, because that's really bad. I hate that.
Definitely does.
So I think they have to win the Charlotte game. You can lose at Toronto. That's fine. Play competitive in Washington and lose, but you got to beat Brooklyn and you got to beat Utah, and then maybe you steal the OKC game. So, God, that's four. That's way too many.
Yeah.
No, I think they'll do it. Four wins.
I think we'll lose to Utah.
Donovan Mitchell has 40 points and everybody's chanting his name and Luke Kennard just like cries at the end of the bench. Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for doing this a little bit early. I really appreciate it.
Hey, do you guys want free money tomorrow, though?
Oh, yeah. Let's get some picks. Let's get some picks, Jamie.
You should. Well, the Pistons are playing at noon 30, so you should take the Pistons -3.5. Love them coming off a tough loss. Outside of that, it's kind of up in the air. I like Sacramento +13 against Oklahoma City tomorrow night, and I also like Golden State -4.5 in Cleveland. Everyone's going to be on Cleveland as the home dog, so we're going to go against the public. Take the Warriors -4.5. Those are your three picks.
So, yeah, I was about to say, like, Golden State's favored by 4.5 at Cleveland? Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. Cleveland's
getting Steph, right? Or is he back?
I'm not sure.
I was gonna say, because he was game time the other day, I think.
I think, regardless of his playing status, Cleveland's defense as of late, I feel pretty comfortable with Golden State.
That's fair. All right, Jamie, where can people get more gambling tips from you?
They're not gambling tips. They're just suggestions.
Where can people get friendly life advice?
There we go. On Twitter at Jamie_Delancey. Yes, financial advice about the NBA, Pistons rants, some music stuff here and there at Jamie_Delancey.
And Ben, where can the people get more of you?
At BR Golker on Twitter. Hit me up.
Now public.
That was now, a big thing. Yes, now public again. Yes.
Man, I missed the whole press conference on that. Congrats.
And you can find me at Laz Chance. That's at LazChance. And, you know, you can comment on the post that'll be on Detroit Bad Boys. You can drop me a line on Twitter. You can send me a DM. I love to talk basketball, and I'll talk basketball with you.
Don't talk about Michigan State basketball, though.
And we can talk about some Michigan State basketball, but we've already, you know, been over an hour on this podcast, and
who had a worse week, Pistons or Michigan State basketball?
Michigan State, 100%. 100%.
This season's so much shorter.
I'm so mad that Miles Bridges, like, still can't take a DHO going right. Like,
I don't know what's worse, watching Michigan State basketball lose or just having to watch college basketball refs. Like, it's kind of a lose-lose situation.
The answer is watching college basketball in general.
The 30-second shot clock is the worst. The 30-second shot clock and the short-ass three-point line is the worst.
And the two halves.
Both too young to remember the 45-second shot clock?
No. Oh, my God.
I don't remember that.
I remember.
Why would they ever do that?
I remember the 35-second shot clock.
I remember 35. I don't remember 45. That's crazy.
No, I think it was 35. I think my old man memory just failed me.
Okay.
I was going to say, 45 is wild. Yeah. The two halves drive me insane. In no other level of basketball do we play two halves of basketball. Like, two halves. It makes zero sense to me why we need to do that in college.
All right. We'll have to do a college basketball semi-pod in March in early, late February. Yeah, we'll do that.
Where we can all rant about college basketball. Sorry.
This is why you come to us for NBA, not college basketball. If you came to listen to us talk about college basketball, you are in the wrong place.
And if you're still listening by now, you're definitely in the wrong or in the right place.
All right. Thanks, everybody, and have a great Martin Luther King Jr. Day.